If you've ever found yourself staring at the ceiling at 2 a.m. wondering how you went from holding it all together to feeling like you're falling apart, you might be in the right place with this episode. Maybe the pills from the doc that were supposed to be temporary turned into a quiet habit that you hid from your family. Maybe the real pain that you're feeling is not in your knees or in your back or some other physical ailment, but maybe it's in memories that you never talk about, and maybe about shame that you keep locked up so that nobody else sees how bad it really feels. Now, what if there was something different? What if you were able to wake up clear-headed instead of foggy? You know exactly why you hurt, and you finally have the tools that are more powerful than another prescription or another drink. You can actually look your kids in the eye without feeling like a fraud. You can talk about what happened without feeling broken. That's what we're going to get into today with our guest, Shannon Curtis. She's the founder of Angel Goddess Healing over in Texas, and she spent years addicted to pain meds that started with a C-section. She carried the weight of miscarriages and childhood trauma and still found a way to eventually get past all of that, forgive, heal, and then turn around and help others do the same. She works with veterans and their families on inner child work, reframing addiction as a symptom instead of a life sentence, and even prepares folks for serious plant medicine work in Mexico that is changing lives for PTSD, TBI, and suicide level depression. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that's deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians who were impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial will be both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit gwattmemorialfoundation.org. All right, now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Shannon, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here. Looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, you bet. Before we kind of dive into the meat of the episode here, could you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, kind of who you are and things like that, a little bit about your background, just so everyone has an idea of who it is we're talking with today.
Yep. My name is Shannon Curtis, and I'm currently located in Texas, and I am the founder of Angel Goddess Healing. It's a sanctuary that I like to say it's a place for anyone who's looking to heal and starting to get into those digging, those dark spots that sometimes we have a hard time doing ourselves. And so I struggled with my own addiction for 7-8 years, went through a divorce, miscarriages, sexual trauma, you name it, I've been through it. And so I found in my healing journey, I wanted to be able to give back, and this was a place that I could start and be able to connect with other people that were probably going through the same things I was going through.
Yeah, and I found that a lot of times the people who have gone through hell and they've experienced traumas and they've gone through all these different things in their lives, they know how much it sucks, and they want to do anything to try to help other people not have to experience that. And it seems like that's kind of the path that you've taken. When you're going through all of these things that you're just talking about, at what point did you kind of realize that you needed to shift direction, make a change in your life, whether it was from addiction or other things that you were doing? And what was kind of like the first step that you took towards healing?
I think my big moment was when my life kind of imploded. I was married for about 7 years. I had a daughter that was 7. And within those first 7 years, I was addicted to pain medicine. It started the day my daughter was born from a C-section. You get morphine, instantly feel good, instantly started numbing the pain. My husband at the time worked out of town that same week. And so here I was, a new mom, found at home with a newborn, and it gave me energy. And so that was kind of my start for 7 years of always, and it was always through the doctors, it was through medical things. And I had a lot of medical reasons for it, but it started becoming a dependence. And then all that became the shame and this dirty little secret I was carrying around of this beautiful home, this housewife, having all of this stuff. And here I am, have this secret. And so finally my life imploded and I couldn't keep that secret anymore. And it was with the offering, my mom called. And she said, "Will you get help?" And I literally, before she even could put the words out, I was like, "Yes." I was just waiting for someone to see me. I wanted to get off pain medicine. There was one little phase that I went through for 3 months, and it was the worst thing, with the worst withdrawals. And I would never wish that on my worst enemy. And so once I found myself back on it, I was like, I can't get off. I can't go through this again. And so I just lived with that shame. And so once I got that, that's where my healing, I went to an amazing place called The Meadows in Arizona, and they really deal with inner child work and really getting to the core of why, what was I trying to numb? And so that's really what helped me, was my starting, was starting sober. What did life look like? What did Shannon look like once I started to clear out all the clutter and really get down to the trauma? And so that's where I would say about 8 years ago, my journey began of, yeah, wanting to know there was a little bit more out there than just what I was going through.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I've talked to many people who've struggled with substance abuse of one sort or another, and nobody that you talk to ever was like, you know what, I'm going to wake up one day thinking, hey, I'm going to go get addicted to this, that, or the other thing, whatever it is. You know, nobody has that in their mind. Nobody grows up as a kid saying, hey, you know what, I want to be addicted to something, you know, when I get older. Like that's not the way anybody envisions life going forward. But sometimes in cases like yours, like, you know, that you're prescribed medication from childbirth, and like, okay, that makes sense, because like, God bless the women out there, because I like, we have three kids, and my wife is a saint who's able to, you know, have those three children. And, you know, yeah, you're probably going to need some pain medication after that. That's a traumatic thing that's happening to your bodies as those kids are coming out, one way or the other, whether it's C-section or, you know, whatever. But that is something that it makes sense. Yeah, sure. You're probably going to need that. Not thinking that, oh my gosh, this is going to lead to years of dependence on this medication because of this one incident that took place. And I'm sure looking back on it now, you'd probably be like, you know, I'd rather just deal with the pain than have to go through, you know, all these years of struggle. It probably would have been better off just dealing with the pain. Now, maybe that might not be the case for everybody, but you know, I would imagine if it was me in that position, I would rather just suck it up and deal with it for a little while. Right. I mean, that's not the case, but in my mind that seems like that would probably be the answer. But when you're dealing with people who are in pain, they're struggling, they're suffering in that moment, they're not thinking 7, 8, 10 years down the road of what is this effect going to be. They're thinking, how do I get that relief right now? And the reason why I bring that up is because it seems like, based on what you're saying, is that there was some other stuff going on in the background with you that you found some relief in through this medication. And you're like, you know what, that relief kind of felt good, and I want to continue that relief. And maybe that's the reason why you continued taking that medication for so long. I mean, am I kind of on the right track with
absolutely? So to back up the story a little bit, I went through a lot of miscarriages and I really struggled, and we'll get into that, but I had sexual trauma when I was 4. And so from that, there was a lot of female problems that I had, and I have had surgeries. I've had hysterectomy. I've been through menopause at, you know, 35. And so there was a lot of things behind my story, but I'll never forget the first time I found out I miscarried. I didn't even know that was possible. And you go in for the first ultrasound to hear the heartbeat, and the doctor pulls you aside and it's like, no, there's no heartbeat. I didn't even know that was possible. But what I remembered from that day was I left there with a prescription for pain medicine, for anti-anxiety, and Valium. Those three things. Not a, here's a card, someone to talk to, here's a grief counselor. You know, those are those things that, looking back, that's what set me up for my addiction, was learning that behavior from the doctor saying, here, this is your answer. This is your answer. Not thinking that starting antidepressant was not going to cure my depression. It was not going to. I work with so many clients that are on antidepressants and they're still depressed. I was on them for 7-8 years. Now I'm not, and I'm not depressed. And so it's that ironic thing of what you get sometimes, that quote unquote medicine is not really the medicine that your soul's looking for. And so that really started my journey of understanding pain medicine numbed pain. But you have to feel the pain. There's a reason why. So I think there's a place for pain medicine, absolutely. But it's, what are you trying to numb? Is it physical pain or is it emotional pain? And that's a big important one.
Right. And when it's a physical pain, like, okay, yeah, I think we can all wrap our heads around that, because, you know, you don't want to be suffering with that physical pain, but you also suffer with emotional pain as well. And when you're using that kind of medication to numb the emotional pain, I don't think that's the best approach. There are certainly better approaches to dealing with that pain and not, like you said, feeling the pain and understanding kind of where that pain is coming from, as opposed to just numbing it out and not feeling it, which probably in the moment, in that temporary moment, probably feels better to just not feel it. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I don't shame it. That's why anyone who's listening, who's struggling with addiction, it's okay. That's what I tell my clients. It's okay. Let's just find the reason why, so we can replace it with something. And that's where I really want to talk about, is not shaming the answer. Addiction is not the shame. It's literally a symptom. It's something saying, I'm trying to numb something that I don't have the right tools to walk through.
Right. Right. And I think it's important to get those tools and to figure out how to walk through that. And it could be any number of different approaches that, you know, everyone's going to be different. So I can't say one approach is going to work better for one person or another. Part of what I like to do with this show is to put out all the different types of approaches that might be useful to certain people. And someone might listen to it and be like, yeah, that doesn't work for me. And they move on and they do something else. And that's fine. But someone might be out there saying, I tried a dozen different things and nothing seems to work for me. And then they hear this one next thing and it becomes, oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. And the light bulb moment comes on and they say, you know what, that's the thing that I've been waiting for. And that's what I've been trying to find all these years. And I've been just suffering and struggling my way through. And now all of a sudden I've heard about this thing and I'm trying it and it's working and life is turning around for me. And you know, I wish it didn't have to be such a long time for some people to before they figure it out. But like you said, sometimes you do have to feel the pain and sometimes you do have to kind of work your way through it. And when you do get to the end of that, the light at the end of that tunnel, you start to realize, like, okay, that struggle, there was some meaning behind that struggle, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that pain, there's a purpose in pain. And that's the thing of, I try to help people, is to understand the pain. Because when you understand it and you don't see it as a punishment, you're like, oh, there's a lesson in that. I don't truly believe we're punished. I don't think the God of my understanding punishes us. And so it's that understanding, can we find the lesson in it? And sometimes once we find the lesson, I always say everything that's happened to me has happened for me. It's not happened to me on punishment. It has literally happened for me, for my growth of who I am and why I'm here.
And, you know, I've said this before on this show, and I think at this point it's worth mentioning again, but, you know, think of all the pains, whether, you know, physical, emotional, things like that, to your point, there is a purpose and they will teach you something and improve your life in one way or another, depending on, you know, what that type of pain is. Even think about as a young child, the first time you maybe touched a hot stove or something that was really hot and you kind of burned your fingers or something. And like there was pain there, obviously. Right. But in that moment you learned, don't touch that. That's really hot. And don't do that again. And now years and years later, you still know not to touch that thing because it will hurt you and it could cause damage to you. And so you've learned something about that environment and now you've improved yourself so that you don't do that. And I know that's a real simple example, but think of like any other pain that you might have, whether it's an emotional pain or physical pain or anything like that. You kind of learn like, well, hey, it hurts when I do this. Well, okay, don't do that. You know, like it's kind of a simple.
Yeah, it's discernment of that's the point is we get to choose what feels good or not. Because, yeah. Okay, so we could take the hot stove. There are some people that like to hurt themselves, physically sure. Hurt themselves. So there could be someone who is like, I liked that feeling, that instant gratification, people that cut themselves. You know, that's what I always say is I never judge the behaviors. It's like curiosity of it. And mm-hmm. like you're saying, it's discernment of we get to decide. Me, I don't like the way a stove feels. I don't want to touch it. I don't want a blister on my hand. I don't want right. that. Right. I actually went away from physical pain. I that's what I do. I know many clients I work with that actually go towards physical pain and they're like, bring it on, bring it on. It does adrenaline. And I'd imagine in the military, you're kind of pushed towards working towards some of that physical pain. Oh, and yeah. So that's where sometimes the wires get a little twisted coming out of the military because you're taught that to work through the physical pain of, I don't care if it hurts, you got to do it. Where me as a civilian, I might be like, I'm not touching that. I'm not doing that. And yeah. So it is very interesting, the point you bring up, that we get to do discernment. We get to decide what feels good or not. But what I've learned with working with a lot of military people, clients, is because then they get a little bit outside of it when they come back to just your everyday of that discernment's a little bit off because you're not in that fight or flight. You're not having to make those life or death decisions. But sometimes then what happens is we make the everyday things feel like that. Feel like it's a burning stove and it's really not.
Right. Right. And yeah, you don't want to be in a position where it's constantly chaotic and crazy like that. So I want to talk a little bit about solutions. I'm pretty sure most people are familiar with pain and trauma and the things that, I mean, that go on in life. If you've lived long enough, you're probably going to experience some sort of pain and some sort of trauma at some point. What do we do about it? I think that's kind of what a lot of people are sitting there scratching their heads thinking, like, I guess I just have to suck it up and deal with this. Or, you know, like to your point before, a lot of folks in the military, you know, you just push through it and you push through the pain and you live with it or deal with it. And that's not necessarily the best approach. You know, you kind of have to do something with it, whether it's some sort of learning lesson or you process it in one way or another. There's a lot of different things you can do, but in your experience, and you work with a lot of veterans, we were talking before we started the recording here, you know, in your experience, what are some of the things that people do to help themselves get through some of these traumas and some of the pain that they're going through, especially with some of the veterans that you've worked with?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is just admitting out loud that you need help. I think that's the number one thing I can tell anyone listening is shame is like the number one killer, meaning whatever you don't talk about, it's going to grow inside of you and it feels yucky. And when you bring it to light, that's when you can start making those changes. But it's that admitting it's not your fault. I think it's that shame of it's okay. You signed up for something to do this job and you go. And I work with people that went and now they're back. And now they're having a really, really hard time. And it's like, what is the purpose? What was the point of going over there? That's what a lot of the men say. All those bad things I did, now what does that make mean? They're dealing with all of that. And so it's that point of, it's okay. Like, let go of the shame of it and start talking about it. Because what happens is, I know for me, I thought I was the only one dealing with it. I thought I was the only one dealing with this really dark, dirty secret. And that's what happens, it feels like, in the vet community. And my partner who I'm with the last couple of years, he's been struggling. He struggles in and out with depression and suicide to the point where he has pulled the trigger. And thank God it didn't go off. But he's been in that darkness. And what I found is his darkness is no different than mine. That's it. It's pain is pain. It's wanting to get rid of something. And so I work with a lot of people that struggle with suicide. And the first thing I tell them is, it's okay. It's okay to want to die. Let's figure out why so we can change it. And that's where my passion is talking about these topics that we shame. And I think suicide, there's an answer in that because it's saying there is something so against what I believe that I would rather die than face it. and they would rather die alone than face it. And so I just work with my clients of, there's nothing you can tell me that I'm going to judge. Nothing. I'm going to be curious about it, but I'm not going to judge it, because being curious about it, then we start to understand the behaviors. Yeah. Where's the shame coming from? So that would be the first place, is just to reach out.
Yeah, agreed 100%. Because to your point, a lot of people do keep those things bottled up inside. They don't want to let them out and air their dirty laundry, if you will, you know, to the world, to their loved ones, to folks maybe in their chain of command or in their jobs or anything. They want to just deal with it and suck it up and deal with it. And I know, you know, personally, I've gone through some tough times, and for the longest time, I was just like, you know what, I'll get through this. Like I've gotten through other things in the past. I'll just suck it up, deal with it. And things only got worse, and things never started getting better until I said, you know what, I gotta go talk to somebody about this. I have to recognize that this is a problem. It's not getting better on its own. It's, you know, just kind of ignoring it isn't the right answer. And when you go and you start talking to somebody about it, that's when that healing can start taking place, and you kind of open up and let it out. And that, like, to your point though, it's nobody ever judged me for the things that I was saying or things that I was feeling or things that were happening or anything like that. It was maybe inquiring out of curiosity, but not like, you would really think that, or you'd really do that, or you would really, you know, whatever. Like, it was never a judgment. It was more, I just want to make sure I got the whole picture right here before we continue. And that was kind of the attitude that I would always get from the folks that I've talked to. And, you know, sounds like that's kind of the approach that you take as well, which I think is great.
And that's why I love being a coach, because I get to talk freely. I had thought about that when I found myself after 15 years of being married, divorced, and completely starting over, and was a housewife and a mom, which I love. I wanted to do a little bit more in my life. I thought about that. And I love coaching because I get to freely talk. And that is a connection piece that I think a lot of people need, is when I tell you my stuff, I've been in it. I've been in this dark place of, maybe I didn't want to commit suicide, but in a way I did. I was slowly killing myself with pain medicine. So it's no different. It was just more in a different viewpoint. And so when you get that camaraderie with someone that's looking towards helping, that really takes the shame away, because I'm sitting there right there with you. I'm not up here above and helping. I'm literally meeting you where you're at. And that's what I tell my clients. I will meet you wherever you're at. It doesn't matter the race, the religion, where you come from, military, not military. It's just, are you willing to want to get better? Do you want to get better? Because it's really a choice. And I know that sounds so simple and cliche, but it is a choice. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I promise you, I never ask anyone ever to do anything I haven't done. And that's where I literally, this is my lifestyle. I've looked at my perpetrator. I have forgiven my perpetrator. I have forgiven perpetrators in my family outside of myself that have done things to loved ones. I have done those things, and I found that forgiveness is the number one thing, but it starts with forgiveness of yourself. Are you willing to remember you're a good person?
Yeah. And that's a hard thing to do sometimes, especially when people, you're talking about military folks, and sometimes they've maybe deployed and gone to combat and had to do things that were, you know, there were difficult things that they might have to do. And some people look at themselves as like, maybe I don't feel like I am a good person. And I think that's where someone like yourself might come in to kind of coach someone back to say, look, yeah, there might have been some things that were not good that has happened in your life. Everyone makes bad decisions from time to time too. And so, but that doesn't mean that the person as a whole is a bad person. And sometimes that person needs to kind of be coached and kind of talked into, okay, well, you know, on a whole, like, yeah, I'm probably not that bad of a person. You know, there's more good than bad. And it's not even a scorecard of, you know, like a balance or anything like that. It's like, just in general, like what's in your heart? Like, are you a good person? You know, some of the bad things that maybe you have done, sometimes people do bad things for good reasons. And, you know, what was that? And maybe just helping people walk through those things to try to come to that conclusion on their own, because, you know, I could tell someone, you could tell someone, oh no, you're a great person, you're wonderful. But if they haven't come to that conclusion on their own, they're probably not going to believe it. And that, I think, is probably where they need to be, right?
Yeah. And I think that's why you bring up a great point of usually when I work with military, it's never really about the military career. We go all the way back to childhood. Sure. And that's what I really work on a lot is inner child work, because that's what it is like you said, if you don't feel like you're a good enough person, I can say it to you until I'm blue in the face, but if you don't believe it, we have to keep going back. And that's what I say. It's like being in bad relationships. It's not your current relationship. You have to go all the way back to figure out where you lost your way and figuring out, this is what I deserve. And that's what happens is when you can separate, it was just a part you played. Like I said, in the military, a lot of the people recently, the men that I've been working with have been questioning the whys. Why did I do these things? For what? For what? Was it worth it? And that's what we really try to work on is separate that. That's a job. That was something you signed up for. That's not who you are. That was a behavior, whatever that is. But let's take that back, because we can focus on that, but that's not who you are anymore. So really they're left with that just yuckiness of maybe why they wanted to serve, why they wanted to be of service. And so when we keep scaling it back, then we can really get into some it's trying to prove to their fathers. Sometimes it's because it's been a legacy within their family and they want to live up to that expectation. Whatever that is, we can keep digging in deeper and deeper and deeper till we finally get to the root of it. And once we do that, that has truly been the miracles I've seen in my work, is when they have that light bulb moment of, oh, it's not about any of this other stuff. It's about that little boy that was wounded that just wanted to be seen by his father.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I've talked to a number of veterans who came out of the military with some sort of mental health issues, whether it's, you know, PTSD or, you know, other things that they may be struggling with. And very often the people will say the root cause of a lot of things that they were dealing with was something that happened in childhood. Maybe it just set up a belief system about themselves, and it kind of just affected them as they experienced other traumas that got kind of layered on top. And all those traumas added up and came to this point where one thing which may have otherwise been a relatively minor thing could have just been that straw that broke the camel's back and just sent them kind of a little bit over the edge where they felt like they couldn't come back from that, and they really needed some help, you know, after that point. And so you mentioned yourself having some traumas as a child, and, you know, it's not uncommon. It should be, but it's not uncommon that children do experience traumas, you know. But that's a kind of just a fact of life. How do we deal with that, and how do we move forward from there, especially at such a young age when your brain is still developing and you're basically writing these beliefs into your brain, telling yourself like this is the way I am, or this is the way life is, or this is, you know, I'm a good person, I'm a bad person. Those types of things are getting etched into your brain at that point at such a young age. How do we reverse some of those trends?
Yeah. So we go back to that child. We go back to that little child. And that's what I work with my clients is you got to go all the way back, and you got to take that little boy, wherever that trauma was, whatever that memory was. Mine for myself was my 4-year-old self of getting taken away outside of my home from a family acquaintance and being molested. I didn't fully have full remembrance till I was in my 40s. I had fragmented pieces of it, but I didn't put it all together because it was so traumatic to my little brain. But that's my healing that I had to do. And the book that I wrote is because it's about going back to that little girl, that 4-year-old, and saying, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. And I got you. So now I take my fully healed self, grown up, takes that hand of that little girl. And I'm like, you're coming with me. And so you have to retrain that little girl or that little boy. And that's what happens a lot. Again, I know I'm keep bringing up military, but obviously it's because I'm on this show, but the military men I work with and women, they have sometimes a hard time getting to that space because it's like the shell that you have to crack open. And sometimes once they get there, those tears come out and then they never stop, and they're scared that they're going to not stop. But it's part of honoring that little boy and honoring all the stuff of, yes, the grown up now and the military man, and he's brave, but that little boy, he's not supposed to be brave. He's supposed to be scared, and you're supposed to honor the fear. And so that's what happens, is helping them honor what that little kid felt like. We get stuck in who we are now, but I'm like, okay, that's cool. The me now knows that this was done for me and all those things, but the four-year-old self didn't know that. And so that's where the inner child work comes in so much, is it's really important to honor the pain of your inner child, of the things the inner child did not know, and the lack of love and understanding that you might not have gotten.
Yeah, right. And it's hard sometimes, I think, for especially military folks who are often seen as the protectors of people. And well, if I'm looking at, you know, a young version of myself, or, you know, somebody else is looking at that younger version, well, that's still me. I'm still the protector person. I don't need protecting. I don't need to go protect that person. That person should be a strong, resilient type person. And, you know, I don't need to protect that person. But to what you're saying, you kind of have to switch that mindset, because yes, at one point we all were little kids, and yeah, a little kid, I mean, you look at a little kid now as, you know, as an adult, like, yeah, of course you're going to go protect that person, you know, because they're little, they're vulnerable. They need that type of protection. They need to feel safe. And so now we need to go and figure out ways to kind of retrain that brain and show that kind of protection to that young version of ourselves.
Yeah. Find that love. That's what I find, is when people can't find the love for themselves at the moment, find it for a child. And that's why I say, if you don't have a child, usually if you have a child, you can easily go back to that, or when they're first born, and that innocence. That's what I need people to find in themselves to truly heal. You have to believe that's who you are. The core, the essence of you, is worthy of the unconditional love. And that's what happens, is I think we're always on this search for unconditional love, but we don't give it to ourselves. We are the hardest on ourselves. And that's all those thoughts that have that shame. I can't tell anyone what's going on because they'll judge me. It's not, because it's because we're really judging ourselves. That's why I have no problem talking about my past and my addictions or having an affair. I've been the bad, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it, because when I was in the bad, I was in pain. That's why I told my daughter, hurt people. They do. They truly do. So when I was out hurting people, I was ultimately hurting myself by not honoring my voice. But that's what happens, is honoring that little innocent child that still lives in us all. Because I think at the end of the day, we all just want to be seen and heard. I really, truly believe, like, that's all we want, is to be validated.
Right. And to your point, you know, yes, you may have hurt people through some of the things that you have done, and other folks out there who are listening, you know, you may be currently in the process of hurting people who maybe you would otherwise say, yeah, no, I love these people, you know, a spouse, a child, some other family member, someone like that. Yeah. And you may be hurting them with some of the things that you're doing, and you kind of have to stop and ask yourself, like, why is it that I'm doing that? And, you know, like you said, very often the answer might be, well, you're hurt yourself. And, you know, hurt people do hurt people, and it's not right. It just is, like, you know, as far as saying, like, oh yeah, no, it's okay, just go ahead and do it, because that's just what people do. Like, you have to recognize that, like, that's what happens. That's a consequence of what happens when people are hurt. So how do we heal ourselves? How do we get past that? And what steps can you take today to start reversing that trend so that you don't continue hurting yourself or other people? And that's something I think a lot of people need to start thinking about, is that, like, yes, that's the path that you're going to continue going down if you don't do something. So what do you do? And what do you specifically need to do? And, you know, how do you start reversing those trends? And I know you work with a bunch of people, you have different kind of modalities that you work with folks. What are some of the things that you do as you're working with people that will help, you know, kind of help them reverse that trend?
Yeah, so one of the big ones that changed my life and my partner's life, he's the one who introduced me and he actually works for them, is Ambio Life Sciences. And it's in Mexico. And it's this place where they do Ibogaine plant medicine, psychedelic plant medicine. And they're having huge, profound changes in people, reversing TBIs, PTSD, big time in the military, big time. And so that's one of my big ones, is I work with people getting them ready as a psychedelic integration coach and a prep coach for those people that are going to go on those journeys, because it's really important. And when I say medicine, it is truly a medicine. It is a plant from West Africa. It's a shrub from the boga plant. That's all it is. And that's why I laugh, that I always think it's so interesting that we call drugs, you know, the plants that are in there, and then the medicines that we call in society or are produced, you know, by man and for profit, and they don't cure anything. Ibogaine, you go in usually one time and that's it. That's it. My partner, he's been twice. So some people go other times, but it's helped him with his brain stuff and his memory. But for me, it helped me reprogram my thoughts. And that's what it does. It opens you up and it shows you your belief system. And it shows you that, so then you can change things about it. And so it's not an easy task. You're in the medicine at least 12 hours. And you have to be medically supervised because it can lower your heart. But it's the most profound thing I've ever experienced in my life. And working with clients with that, especially military, they're getting some big, big things in Texas, passed a bill to study it. And so I'm just excited to be on the forefront of that. But the biggest thing is to be ready for it. Why are you going? Because that's what I find, is the medicine doesn't heal you. It shows you have the answers to heal yourself. And that's the biggest thing, is in order to heal myself, it was to change my belief system. That's all it was, to believe I was a good person. And so it gives you that opportunity to, not everyone has visions. A lot of people do. I have visions. And so it showed me all these different things, memories in my life, these core memories, these core moments. It showed me my molestation and how that changed. I was able to actually forgive my perpetrator and see literally he was of the same light as me at the end of the day. And it was a message. It was for me. It was something my soul wanted to experience. And so I've just seen the changes in people really that are wanting something different. Like you said, the same things aren't working. The pills, they have guys that show up with bags and bags of medicine and they leave with nothing. Yeah. And now they're opening it up to MS and Parkinson's, and it was in heroin addicts. You don't go through withdrawals. There's all these like literally miracles that are happening. And so that's a big one. But I want to preface on anyone who's listening, please, please vet where you go. Your facilitator, because it's not legal in the United States right now. Like I said, they're studying it in Texas, and hopefully that will be on the forefront of it. I love Ambio Life Sciences in Mexico. There's a couple other ones, but really vet it. This is not something where sometimes people hear and they're like, oh, sign me up, without really knowing what it is. It's a big task and it's a lot on your body. But for people that are ready for big changes, that's probably the biggest experience that I've seen in my clients that are wanting to go and just dive in.
Right. And I'm glad that you mentioned what you just said, as far as it, you know, it is not legal in the United States. So the last thing I want people to do is listen to something that some guy on a podcast was talking about, and you know, just decide like, hey, this sounds like a great idea. I'm going to go do this now. And then they get themselves in more trouble, and it just is not a good situation. So yeah, definitely vet the people that you're doing this with. Make sure it's done legally. Make sure it's done safely. Like you said, under medical supervision, because you don't want anything bad to happen while you're doing this. And until you do it, you don't necessarily know what the effects are going to be. And, you know, those medical providers are there, and they're able to, you know, to kind of help out with all that and make sure it's done safely. And if anything does go wrong, they're there to help kind of adjust course. And so, yeah, definitely do your research. Don't just take my word or your word or anything like that for it. I haven't gone through this, so I'm not the person to talk to. So I don't know what's good, what's bad, what's just okay in the middle somewhere. I don't really have any opinion on that either way. But like I said at the beginning, I like to share all the different options that are available to people. And this is something that's, to your point, it's coming up more and more in the news. There's a lot of research being done, stuff like what's going on in Texas. There's just, it's becoming more and more prevalent in the veteran space. And a lot of people are working through it. They're using this as a tool to help them heal. And the more people are doing it and the more good stuff that we're seeing, they're going to start telling their friends and like, hey, this worked for me. Maybe it'll work for you. And then more and more people are going to start having interest in it and wanting to try it. So, you know, I think it's important to cover it and cover it as far as the show is concerned with talking about the benefits, obviously, like how can this help you, but also understand what some of the risks are. And you don't want to just go jump into this without proper supervision, proper care and treatment. And one of the things that you did mention is that you have to be open to some sort of change of your beliefs. And I think one of the big things that people kind of struggle with is there's kind of two things that people might be having going on in their head is their knowledge of something and then their beliefs of that something. And so I might, you know, as someone who might be struggling with their mental health or whatever, it's like I might know that I'm a good person, but I don't believe it. Mm-hmm. And or I might know that it wasn't my fault that X, Y, or Z happened, but maybe I don't believe it. And so there's a difference between that knowledge and that believing. And sometimes that disconnect is what is really holding people back. And beliefs can be super strong and really be kind of a hindrance when it comes to ultimately healing. But it sounds like from what you were saying is that this can help you kind of reshape some of your beliefs about yourself.
Yeah, it resets. It goes in there and it shows you. So how my partner learned was on the Sean Ryan show, which a lot of people I'm sure listen. And he went to AMBO where I went, and many, many military and people that have been on his show have gone to it. And so it felt something very right. And so my partner went 6 months before, and it was a beautiful 5-day experience, but it's mind, body, and soul. You don't just take something and you go and stuff. It's a whole experience. And you start off with the sweat lodge and you get a coach before. And so you're working with the coach before understanding, what am I trying to get rid of? You always have to have an intention and a burn list. What are you going there for to gain? And what are you going there to let go of? And so that's a big start of it. But it's the spiritual side of things too. We call it the woo sometimes, of how much are you okay with that? Because it is a spiritual medicine. It's something that you ingest. But the only way I can say it is, it's like a dreamlike state. Really, you lay down and it's at nighttime because they honor the tradition of the tribe, and you put a mask on. And so as soon as you have like the little eye mask on and your eyes are closed, you're off. You're off in another universe, wherever you're at, experiencing, reliving something, whatever it is. It feels so real. But then someone comes and taps you on the shoulder and says, Shannon, and you open your eye mask and you're in the room. So it's that weird thing of you're in it, but you're also not. And so they have a medical staff all the time with you, and you have a heart monitor on, which is, I loved the both, that you got the medical side, so you felt very safe. But then you have the spiritual side that honors the medicine, and you have the coaching on the front end and the back end. And so it was just a beautiful journey of giving you the opportunity to rest. Some people just rest for 12 hours and they sleep, but then they're like, nothing happened. But then they'll go back and their TBIs are less, literally less. They walk in maybe with 5 and they're down to 1 or 2. And they're studying the brain, how that does that, or the depression and things. I saw the shift in my partner instantly, the shift of everything bothered him. And I'm sure some people might resonate with this when you're on that high end, that fight or flight all the time. Mm-hmm. Everything is out to kind of get you, and you drive, and you'd have to sit by the door, you know, to look at the exit and all that stuff. And I'll never forget afterwards when he called, the first thing was I had my dogs running around. And normally that noise in the background would set him off. And, you know, and I'm sure spouses or partners that are listening might resonate. You're kind of walking on eggshells. Like, okay, I got to keep everything at bay or else they're going to set off. Well, I remember that. And he starts laughing and he's like, oh my gosh, there's just dogs running around. And that was one of the most beautiful moments, because he didn't even realize that in that moment, he could just see it not as a threat. not as a distraction, not as something out to get him. And those were those huge shifts that might sound simple, but when you're living your life every day in fight or flight, you finally just get to relax. And it's like brings you back. It's like a reset. It's like a power wash in your body. And it literally resets all the brain, the neurotransmitters. And so you get to decide when you get back home, it stays in your system for about 3 months. And you get to decide, you get to add in all the good stuff. So you can start meditating, start doing yoga, working out. And the more you do that, it's literally just get ingrained into your brain. And before you know it, you become that person. And so it's just a great reset to kind of, like you said, filter out the things that maybe are no longer serving you, those beliefs.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. And those are the things that maybe are holding you back. And these other things that are not part of your day-to-day practices, like the meditation or the breath work or whatever the things are that you are wanting to add in to your life. They're maybe not those things that are habit yet, that or they're not just routine and things that you just do automatically. And so by kind of rewriting the way your brain operates, that can start to become that new thing that you start doing. And those things have very positive benefits. Those old beliefs that were not serving you they have some negative effects on you. And so if you can swap out the negatives for something that's a positive, I see that as a win all around, because you're clearing out the clutter and you're adding in some good stuff and you're helping yourself basically all around. But I know that there's some people who might be listening, saying to themselves that, you know, I've gone through too much, I've experienced too much, or my story's too dark. The stuff that I've dealt with is just too terrible. You know, what's one thing that they can ask themselves or say to themselves? What's one thing that they can do right now that they can do to maybe start shifting that belief? And maybe that's even something that, you know, through this experience that might help them to kind of move past that limiting belief that they might have.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a big believer in gratitude. So sometimes people are like, I don't even know where to start. I'm so deep in it, I don't know where to start. Start with gratitude. I always do like a three things you're grateful for every day. And some of those things can be the simplest things. I'm grateful for being alive. I'm grateful for this. Maybe you're not grateful for being alive. Maybe you're just grateful that you have a roof over your head, whatever it is, but it's training your brain to find the good. Because when you look for the good, I guarantee you're going to find the good. But guess what? You look for the bad, I guarantee you, you're going to find the bad. So it's a matter of perspective. Do you want to look at all the things and say, those are the things, that's who I am, all these bad behaviors? Or do you want to look at all the good things? Because again, I can decide really easy all the good things I've done and all the bad things. I choose to look at the good because ultimately I am good. The bad was behaviors. It was a reaction. There was a reason why I did that. We don't just wake up, like you said, I didn't just wake up and say, I want to be an addict. I want to be addicted to pain medicine. I want to have an affair. No, it was all these things led up to like somebody pay attention to me. Ultimately, I just wanted to be seen and heard. And sometimes we just go inwards because we just are afraid to really be seen and heard. So it's that ironic thing that we do the opposite of what we want. But it's that self-belief. Are we really worthy to be seen? Are we really worried? And so what happens is the gratitude, you start looking for that. And sometimes the gratitude can just be someone treats you really bad, something bad happens to you. Thank you for showing me who I choose not to be. It can simply be that. Someone's a jerk to you at work or a boss or whatever. Thank you for showing me I never want to be that way. That can be the gratitude in it. And so it's just a matter of shift of perspective of how do you choose to live your life? Do you want to live it in pain and misery, or do you want to live it in gratitude and understand the pain and misery? That's the difference. Is there's a lot of beauty in all of it once you understand it.
Yeah. And I've to those scenarios that you just described, I've often thought of it as, you know, thank you for showing me your true colors. So now I know who I'm dealing with. So, you're not putting on a show, putting on an appearance for me. And I'm now thinking that you're this great person when really you're kind of a jerk. And now I know this. So it kind of opens up your eyes to those types of things. And I'd rather know that early on, so that way I don't invest too much time or energy into this person that I don't really want to, you know, associate too much with. I mean, sometimes you might have to if it's a job or something like that, but, you know, at least you know who this person is, so that they don't come and surprise you, you know, a year or two later, and then you feel like you're getting blindsided by this person. That's really who they were all along, but you had this different belief or this different a view of who this person is. And so, you know, it's important though to have that kind of gratitude, because you're right. The more you seek out the good, the more good you'll find, and the more you seek out the bad, the more bad you'll find. And that's the same with anything. I mean, if you think about, if you've ever gotten a new car and, you know, it's a red Ford, whatever, and you start driving around and you start seeing a bunch of red Fords on the street, and it's like, man, yesterday there weren't that many people driving around in red Fords, but now all of a sudden I have a new one, and now everyone copying me? No, it's the same amount of cars that were out on the road yesterday. Is your mind is just now trained to notice those things a little bit more than you would have before. And so, you know, it's because you're looking for it, you're going to find it, you know.
Absolutely. So that's why I tell my clients, what are you looking for? What are you looking for? What do you want out of this? I tell you so many times in the beginning, I would ask, what if I can ask you your highest version of yourself? If I had a magic wand and I'm like, poof, I'm a little fairy, whatever you want is yours. Most people don't know the answer. Yeah. And I tell them, it's okay, but let's start with that. Let's start with, what does the end look like? What do you want your life to look like? Then we have somewhere to go. But it's like driving around a car and not putting in your navigation and getting frustrated that you don't know where you're going. You haven't put in the navigation. And so that's what I do as a coach, is let's figure it out together. You get to decide. That's how the universe, how my belief is, you get to be whatever you choose to be. But you have to know first. And that's where I think a lot of people are stuck in getting out of the military, is, what is my purpose now? Who am I? Who am I outside of the uniform? And so we get to start from ground zero and literally say, I don't know, you tell me. And then we get to dive into passions and what makes you happy. And what I found with a lot of military is they want purpose in helping people. To serve. That's literally what you did, was to risk your life for serving. So now let's find some of these gifts you have and let's use them. And so my hope is to literally create a space. And we do retreats, and we're going to be doing them in the summer of Montana next year. And it's to create the space where vets can come and they can explore those passions. And then we can do it with a purpose in their life. But I feel like that's what you need, is a passion, but you got to have a purpose too.
Yeah, for sure. The purpose is such a huge piece of it, especially for veterans, because to your point, there was that purpose behind your service, where you raised your hand and you said, yes, I'm willing to give everything up to and including my life for this country. And that you went off and you did something very bold, very meaningful, very impactful. And then you get out and like, that's all gone. And it kind of seems like nothing else adds up, because, you know, short of, you know, maybe a police officer or some sort of law enforcement or things like that, nobody's really asking you to, or, you know, firefighters too. And, you know, there's some other jobs, but there's a lot fewer jobs on the civilian side where people are asking you to risk your life on a regular basis. And, you know, and so it just doesn't feel as meaningful sometimes.
That's so interesting. And that would be my curiosity, is why do you feel like you have to risk your life to make an impact?
Well, I don't know that you necessarily have to, but when you signed up for something that was one of the kind of the hazards of the job, is that is something that you already said, yes, I'm willing to do this. I'm willing to risk my life for this job, because quite frankly, that's what it is. It's part of the job. And then anything else is not as severe of a consequence if things, you know, don't go a certain way. But it does, just sometimes maybe it doesn't feel like it's as meaningful or as
important. And that's right. And that's what I mean is like, that's what we have to retrain the brain to think, just because like my work, I'm not risking my life every day, but I know mine is just as meaningful because I'm helping change people's life. But right. I had to find that confidence in myself for that and working with vets. Because again, if I didn't have that confidence, I would think, oh, well, they know it all because they were willing to die for it. Right. Yep. That's the difference of that. It's no difference better than or worse than. It's just like you said, trained. Your brain was trained. You had to be almost on this high to where you'd walk into fight. You literally walk into a gunfight being like, if I die, I die.
Yeah.
That's not normal for me to think of. Right. And so it's taking away that shame of your brain was trained to do that. Now we got to retrain it. And that's the hard part that I think people are having a hard time with. How do we validate that, but then also find that same excitement and purpose within the civilian life?
Yeah, exactly. And to your point, you know, the work that you do is completely, totally meaningful. And there are other jobs that people have, totally meaningful. And there's a lot of purpose and a lot of good stuff going in to those other jobs. Just sometimes I think there's that intensity of it's all on the line. And then when it's not all on the line, it doesn't seem as big of an impact. You could be playing poker and you could have $100,000 sitting in front of you and you put it all on the line. That's going to be a pretty big impact if you go in, you go all in with that $100,000, and that's going to probably get that adrenaline pumping.
I was just going to say adrenaline. That's that high and low that we start seeking. Yeah. That's that feeling of, there's some people that gamble love to lose. They love the feeling of that sinking feeling. And then you have the ones that do. So it is, it's so interesting. It's just on a bigger level. Like you said, it's just a bigger stage of that adrenaline of that highs and lows.
Yeah. And that's not to say that, you know, $1,000 isn't a big impact, but it just doesn't feel as big as that bigger, you know, push. So it's just, maybe just the way we've trained our brains and just the way we're wired right now. But, you know, ultimately you have to, like you said, you have to find that purpose, you have to find that meaning and especially your passion and try to kind of accommodate for all of that. Before we wrap up, I'm sure there's some listeners out there who are interested in you and kind of the work that you do and maybe want to learn a little bit more about what you do. Where can people go to find out more information and reach out and get some help?
Yeah, so they can go to my website. It's www.angelgoddesshealing.com, and they can find me there. And I'm also on social media. I have retreats coming up. I'm doing women's in January, but I'm also ultimately going to be doing vet ones. We do small ones here in Texas, but ultimately it will be in Montana, where we're just creating a space for vets to come and have a place where they can just be themselves. And really, whether they're active duty or not, I work with them all, is just find a space that's like sacred, to where they don't have to be judged. You can talk about the good and the bad of it, because I know there's bad and it's okay. You know, there's a lot of good, but there is a lot of bad. And so it's just trying to create that space to where we can help these vets that walk away feeling just a little bit better, so they can reach out to that. And then I also do the integration, the psychedelic coach, and then I'm an intuitive coach, I'm a medium. So I do a little bit of everything. And yeah, I'm just grateful to be here today to be of service to everyone that's given service to me and my family.
Well, we definitely appreciate it. And hopefully some folks will check out your website and reach out for some help. All the links that you mentioned will be in the show notes, your website and social media links and all that kind of stuff. So people can follow you, reach out, contact, and do all that kind of stuff too. All those links will be right there in the show notes. So Shannon, thanks so much for your time and thanks for what you do to help folks find healing and find a better path in their own lives. So thanks so much.
Thank you. And thank you for your service.
Appreciate it.